When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Mail checks, invoices, documents, and everything you need to keep your business running. Get rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS. And with the mobile app, you can take care of mailing on the go. Make the same no-brainer decisions as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up at Stamps.com with code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
You don't get rich writing science fiction. If you want to get rich, you start a religion. That is exactly what L. Ron Hubbard did in 1952, and since then it has been controversy after controversy, hidden secrets. And today we talk with Tony Ortega, an American blogger and journalist who is best known for his daily blog about Church of Scientology called The Underground Bunker. Hi, I'm Tony Sweet with this week's guest co-host, Trisha Carr of Charm Life. We will talk with Tony about his journey of how he got started in seeking the truth behind Scientology. What is true? What is false? What do we hear? Is it a cult? Is it a religion? Or is it just a ploy to become rich? Well, we'll find out today right here on Truth Be Told. Please welcome to Truth Be Told, Tony Ortega. Hey, Tony, how you doing? We got to let the crowd go down a little bit, you know, just because. Welcome, sir. Hey, what's going on over there?
Well, you know, just keeping up my daily coverage. We had a fun story today about who are the wealthiest people providing the biggest donations to keep the Church of Scientology afloat. And that's always eye-opening. So we had a really fun conversation at the website today.
Well, it's funny when you say afloat. I mean, it's like a lot of people. Here's my story. I don't personally have never been part of Scientology, and then we'll get into it. But I dated somebody that her brother actually had inherited a lot of money from his grandfather in Kansas, in Wichita, Kansas. And so he eventually, I don't know how he did it, but decided, just check out Scientology. Well, half of his inheritance end up going to Scientology. He came out here, did something out here at the main campus here, and then went back to Kansas. I don't know if he's still a part of it. That's been years ago, but I know that they took...
And what amount of time?
Oh, very short.
Wow.
Very short. Yeah, I know it was at least $70,000, $80,000, and he inherited quite a bit. I mean, Tony's here today to talk about his journey of how he got involved, and I'm curious about that. I know you were not part of Scientology at any time, but I mean, I think this perks a lot of people's interest. And we were talking beforehand how, you know, we're all interested in kind of, I hate to quote cultish, but it does have a cultish feel to it. So tell us your take on how you became interested in Scientology and doing now a daily blog about it.
Sure. Well, I grew up in L.A., and I don't think you can grow up in Los Angeles without having at least some awareness of Scientology because it had such a strong presence there. And I had found myself in Phoenix, of all places, in 1995, starting a new job as a reporter for a really wonderful weekly paper there called The New Times. And my job was to find stories that the daily paper had either ignored or done badly. And my eye was caught by this letter to the editor in the daily paper there by a guy saying, listen, you reported on my lawsuit, but you left out the key detail that it was really the Church of Scientology who was behind the plaintiff who sued me.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, that sounds like an interesting story. So I reached out to the guy, and it turned out to be a fantastic story. His name is Rick Ross. He's a very well-known cult expert. And I got to do the first real profile of Rick, and it was my first cover story for that publication. And the nice thing about that organization is that you had a lot of freedom to kind of, one story might lead to another. And so over the next few years, I wrote about a lot of different things, but every once in a while I'd come back to Scientology. I just was fascinated by it. I had made some great sources through those early stories. And so it was just something that became part of my, you know, sort of portfolio of things that I was interested in. And then eventually, years later, I ended up as the editor-in-chief of the Village Voice in New York City, right before the anonymous phenomena happened. And so here, it was early 2008. I'm trying to help the Voice find interesting things to write about online. And anonymous explodes over that Tom Cruise video. And, you know, Scientology trying to kind of censor information about itself. And so I just started putting stuff on the Village Voice website about Scientology that I had researched over the years, and it exploded. I mean, I quickly became the most read blogger in the entire chain of newspapers, and I just really enjoyed it. So I just decided that, you know, there had been some great exposés of Scientology over the years going way back to the 60s. But inevitably what would happen is Time Magazine would have it on the cover, or the Los Angeles Times would have a great series, but it would soon kind of dim in people's memories. I really believe that what Scientology deserved was a daily beat reporter that day in and day out would look at all of its controversies, remind people about what controversies had existed in the past. And I really enjoyed doing it. So I gave myself, I gave myself that job. And I've been doing it for the last eight years. And I've written a couple books. And every morning at 7 a.m., you know there's going to be a new story at TonyOrtega.org, The Underground Bunker. That's my book, The Unbreakable Miss Lovely, about Paulette Cooper. We, she and I together have a new book out called Battlefield Scientology. And every morning, 7 a.m., go to TonyOrtega.org, The Underground Bunker, and you're going to see a new story with some new information about Scientology. So, and the nice thing about that is it's grown up this community of fantastic commenters, people who were in Scientology for a long time that know a lot more about it than I ever have, will weigh in and explain things. And so it's a great just location on the internet.
Well, one thing that I think is, as of recent, I think this is the last season, but just like UFO and Ancient Aliens, kind of Ancient Aliens brought the UFOs kind of to the mainstream and got people interested in, you know, things that most people didn't even think about. But Leah Remini brought Scientology to the mainstream of getting her own TV show and TV show about Scientology. And I think that's where a lot more people, because you would hear about it, but even in the Midwest, I never heard about it until I came here, then realized Kirstie Alley had opened a church in Wichita, Kansas.
She opened a Scientology church there?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Well, they did, but because of her, they did. But,
right.
But so it's kind of becoming more, not necessarily popular, but just becoming more aware of who they are. Because I think even when we say cult, you don't think it necessarily is a cult. Is that correct?
Well, I don't correct people that call it that. I just don't want to get into this endless argument online.
Of what?
When you say, you know, Scientology has ripped apart a family or forced a young woman to have an abortion, someone will inevitably say, well, yeah, but they're not a religion, they're a cult, and then that's it. Well, that doesn't explain anything. I just don't want to get into that argument about what's a religion, what's a cult.
Yeah.
They want to call themselves a church? Fine. So why is a church splitting apart families, forcing young women to have abortions, extorting people, and then trying to destroy former members with the use of expensive private investigators?
Right.
That's really what I care about, and not this endless debate online about what is a church, what is a religion, what is a cult. Because I think most people would say, for example, that NXIVM, that just went through this big trial, I think most people would say that that's a cult.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? It's not a religion. It's not a church. So is a cult a religion or not? See? So I just feel like that's fine for the academics to argue about all day, and there's websites that argue about that endlessly. I just don't think that's as important as what Scientology does. They want to call themselves a church? Fine. I call them a church. but it's what that church does, which I think people should be concerned about.
Well, it's not like the word cult is a clinical term. So, it's right, really, right. You know, it's the meaning we ascribe to it. It's very semantic. It's very subjective, really. It's, you know,
You're absolutely right, Trish. There are some academics that will tell you that there are specific criteria they use to describe a cult and not a cult. But for the vast majority of people, the word cult is simply church I don't like.
Right.
And so that's why I just try not to use it. It's just too subjective.
Now, did L. Ron Hubbard, did he actually start it off as a church? Or did they later on, because of the tax purposes, you know, they found the tax benefits are a lot better as a church because they didn't have to pay taxes?
That's a great question. And so it's very interesting how he developed it, because all of this starts on May 9th, 1950, when L. Ron Hubbard comes out with the book Dianetics. Mm-hmm. And what I always try to point out to people is the subtitle of that book. The full title of that book is Dianetics, the Modern Science of Mental Health.
Wow.
And there's no question that initially he tried to sell it as a real science that he had discovered to describe the human mind correctly for the first time ever.
But he's not a scientist. And he's not a scientist, so how dare he?
Well, he claimed to be one, and he claimed to have done all this research that none of us can find any evidence that he ever did. I like Lawrence Wright's description in the movie Going Clear. He said it was basically psychological folklore.
Mm-hmm.
And he thought he came up with this new way of thinking about the mind. It was a science. And the early people that followed him really did believe they were doing something scientific. Now, it was very strange. And what Dianetics was about when it first started were these clubs you formed. And you and another person were counseling each other and questioning each other with the aim of trying to remember what it was like when you were a fetus in the womb. Mm-hmm. If you could just remember the terrible things that happened to you while you were still inside your mother, it would answer a lot of the questions for why you weren't a more effective speaker, why you weren't better at business, you know, decades later. And so they really felt that they were doing something scientific. I think most scientists would tell you that's preposterous, but whatever. They thought there was some scientific principle involved. Dianetics was a huge hit. There were a lot of people doing it in 1950. By 1951, it had all fallen apart. Hubbard was going through a terrible divorce. His foundations were going bankrupt. It was just a very quick fad that had died. And he actually lost the use of the word Dianetics in bankruptcy.
Really?
So in 1952, he was in Wichita, Kansas, and then Phoenix, Arizona, trying to rebuild his empire. And he was fortunate that one of his early followers was a Kansas oil millionaire who basically gave him the money to get back on his feet. He ended up in Phoenix. Now, by this time in 1952, some of those early followers weren't satisfied with just going back to the womb. They felt they could go back farther to previous lives. Mm-hmm. And so Hubbard pretended that he was dragged into this by his followers, that this wasn't his idea. And so this new thing he came up with would be, okay, the real problems in your life are not what happened to you while you were in your mother's womb, but what happened to you thousands of years ago, millions of years ago. That's what we're going to try to remember through the counseling. Now, he couldn't call this Dianetics because he'd lost that in bankruptcy temporarily. So this is what he called Scientology. And that's how Scientology started in 1952. But even then, they had very few customers. They were doing very poorly. And in 1953, he wrote this really important letter to one of his followers, who's played by Laura Dern in the movie The Master, and said to her, you know, these centers are empty. Maybe if we made them churches, it might help. And he literally uses the words, the religion angle. Mm-hmm. He tells her he wants to try the religion angle. And there were two big motivations for him. One, of course, was taxation. Yes, if you're a church, you can call yourself, you get 501c3 nonprofit status and you don't have to pay taxes. That's a big one. But the other one I think people kind of forget is that Dianetics, from the beginning, was making these major health claims. You know, Hubbard basically said he could cure anything with this counseling he'd come up with. And the FDA didn't like that. Back then, the FDA had some real teeth and went after people who had these wacky health claims. Today, you get a TV series, right? I mean, today there's almost right. there's virtually no policing of this. But back then, if you said, hey, I'm gonna use some counseling techniques that'll cure your cancer, you got in trouble. And so calling yourself a church mm-hmm. insulated you against that kind of investigation to a certain degree. So that was his motivation. In 1953, it became the Church of Scientology. And you know, you talk to longtime Scientologists and they'll tell you that, no, it's still inside Scientology, it's still considered a science. That little e-meter they use to help you remember what happened to you 5 million years ago in another part of the galaxy, that's science. There's no belief involved. And the church thing is simply for the lawyers and for tax reasons.
Is it true that...
It depends on who you talk to. Some people will say that. Other people will tell you, no, definitely it's my church, it's my religion. But, you know, it did have that history where it went from a science to a church.
Is it true that he used to give himself medals that he didn't actually earn and wear them?
Well, that's a good question because that's come up a lot recently, especially since Lawrence Wright's great New Yorker magazine article in 2011 and then his movie Going Clear. Some really excellent work by a historian named Chris Owen has shown without any doubt that Hubbard had a very disappointing, sort of disastrous World War II experience as a lieutenant mm-hmm. in the Navy. He did get a couple of commands of ships, but they ended in ignominy and embarrassment. He was never in combat. At the end of the war, he ended up in a hospital, he claimed, because he'd been machine gunned. But actually, he was never in combat, and we have his medical records. He was in hospital for hemorrhoids and pink eye.
Oh, no. Okay. Ew. After serving
those years, though, even if you're not in combat, you're still going to get some medals for participation, basically. And according to his war records, he did earn like 4 or 5, I don't know the exact number, of medals simply because he was in the Pacific Theater or whatever. When Lawrence Wright went to investigate all this in 2011, the church was saying that he had 24 medals, including 2 Purple Hearts. Now, the question is whether L. Ron Hubbard created those lies or whether the church created those lies about him. Mm-hmm. And I'm not 100% sure where the source of those lies came from, but those were fraudulent records. Lawrence Wright went to the trouble of getting the originals out of the war records and showed that he did not have Purple Hearts or any of those other things. So the Church of Scientology, no question, was pushing the idea that he had all of these unearned medals, but I'm not sure that L. Ron Hubbard ever did himself.
Can I just say that mysterious voice that just piped up is David Gandelman, davidgandelman.com. He and I are both spiritual teachers and intuitives, and we actually do use some tools of, you know, inner child. And there is there's this practice of, if you were actually born by cesarean, then you may be missing that hug that the womb gives you when you come out. And we also, there are alternate and past lives in the practices that we do. So I find it really interesting that churches, cults, movements, whatever, these organizations, sometimes there is something to it that can actually be a useful tool. You're talking about the engram machine? That's supposed to be some kind of biofeedback. Biofeedback is a very useful, generally speaking, and properly used, a tool that's used in both medicine and psychology. So, but all these tools have to be used with intelligence, you know?
And integrity. Yeah.
And integrity, thank you. Yeah.
Well, let me just make it real clear. I don't have any problem with people going through a personal exploration about whether they've lived previous lives,
mm-hmm, of course,
what they've experienced in the womb. If they mm-hmm. want to believe that, I don't think there's any scientific evidence for that, but if they want to believe that, I don't have any problem with it. The problem I have with the Church of Scientology primarily is that you're going to spend years and years and incredible amounts of money. Mm-hmm. I mean, at the top, you're literally spending about $800 an hour
oh my gosh.
On this counseling.
Wow.
In order to not only explore these past lives, but also they believe that there are these invisible alien mm-hmm. souls traveling through life with you.
And, psychic engrams or something, right? That word psychic engrams.
No, not engrams. That's something else. These are body thetans.
Okay. Oh,
they're,
got it.
They're individual people
okay.
that you can't see that are, you've got hundreds of thousands of them attached to you.
Oh.
And only $800 an hour Scientology counseling will you be able to drive them away from yourself. Now, again, if that's what you want to believe, I don't have a problem with it. The problem I have you ever heard the Church of Scientology say any of this? No, they keep it hidden. Mm-hmm. What they tell you is that they're a self-help group, kind of sort of like a corporate training. They give off the vibe of like mm-hmm. you're going to go through some corporate training to learn how to speak better in front of a crowd, and you're going to unleash your potential. And all of their videos are real slick, and they just make it look like they're part of this really hip group that have got their act together. And they never explain that what they're about is past life therapy, invisible alien souls attached to you, mm-hmm. years and years and incredible amounts of money. See, that's what the difference I find between the something that calls itself a church called Scientology and something that calls itself a church like, you know, the Catholic Church or Jewish synagogue, whatever. I mean, you know, it's very obvious what Protestants believe, for example. It takes you about 2 minutes to explain it. It's right there in a Bible, costs you a dollar. it's the subterfuge. It's the secrecy. It's the bait and switch that I have a real problem with in Scientology. Again, I don't have any problem with people believing in these things. It's the fact that they're roping people in and only telling them later after they've spent incredible amounts of money. And then they do all this heavy indoctrination mm-hmm. that they are the only ones with the truth. And you need to break off all contact with people that don't believe that you do. And so that's how they rip apart families. That's how they extort people for incredible amounts of money. That's the real issue I have. I just want to make that clear. I do not have a problem with these beliefs.
Sure. Yeah. No, I agree. And what are they against homosexuals or something? Do they try to convert people from being homosexual? I don't remember if that's something I've heard or not.
Well, I mean, Hubbard was a classic mid-century sort of okay. red baiter, homophobe,
yeah.
Very much a product of his time. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so in Dianetics, he denounces homosexuality as a perversion.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes into more explanation about that in his second book, Science of Survival. It's a really disgusting hang-ups he had about the whole thing, about sexuality and stuff. And he came up with this thing he called the tone scale.
Mm.
He basically mapped all of human emotion on a numerical scale, which sort of makes sense, but doesn't really make sense. And there's no scientific evidence behind it. But, you know, basically the sort of worse off you are, the lower you are on the scale.
Mm.
And initially you were somewhere between 0, which is dead, and 4, which was like this nice state of, yeah, there it is, right. And then eventually if you're non-Scientologist, the best you could get would be 4.0. But only in Scientology, you can get all the way up to 40, which is like the serenity of beingness or something like that. Anyway, he put homosexuals on 1.1, which is also covert hostility. So what he was saying was that homosexuals will lie to you to your face and stab you in the back the first chance they get. And only through Scientology auditing, which is their word for counseling, can you raise your tone level? Because remember, you want to be up at the 4 and then higher once you get into the higher Scientology level. So essentially what he's saying is that through Scientology auditing, you not only can raise your tone level, but you'd no longer be homosexual. It's a gay cure.
Wow.
And that's, I've written some stories about, you know, there was one gay guy in West Hollywood that was determined to try to give Scientology a better reputation and was claiming that, you know, it wasn't homophobic and it was all negative press. Well, he died and his friends gave me his private papers in which he privately was talking about how terrible Scientology was to gay people and how he was so frustrated and that you could only go so high in the training before they would not want you to go any higher. So it's definitely, on the local level and among rank and file Scientologists, I'm not saying they're all homophobes. I'm saying it's a homophobic organization. And no question, in the upper ranks of the organization, there's a lot of anti-homosexual feeling and policies.
Well, I want to switch a little bit of gears with that, because I interviewed a gentleman. He was the kind of a high priestess of the Church of Satan.
Yeah, I was on that show with you.
Yeah, yeah. And he says that even in Church of Satan, that they don't bring children in until 18. Like they get, and then they don't force them. They just say, hey, if, you know, go do your research, come back if that's what you want to be a part of Church of Satan. Even Christianity, you know, they bring children in at a young age, and but, you know, they don't really force. But Church and Scientology, they kind of separate families, don't they? And keep and kind of put them, I hate to say it, in a brainwash way from day one.
Well, indoctrination.
Yeah,
Do they groom children, I think, might be a good question.
I thought you were going to say they put them in cages.
Pretty early on, Hubbard established this really hardcore inner elite that he called the C Organization.
Right.
This is 1967. Mm-hmm. And it exists today. And in order to be part of that inner hardcore and join that group, you have to sign a billion-year contract.
And promise
to come back lifetime after lifetime. And they work 365 days a year. They work 112 hours a week. When they get paid anything, they get paid about $25 to $50 a week, if anything. Hmm. They're screamed at. It's just this incredibly difficult existence. And it's just, you have to completely commit yourself. And so if, you know, you join the Sea Org and your rest of your family doesn't, you're just not going to see them for years. Not because you've been asked to drive them away, but simply you work every day and you never see them. So the issue then became, how do you work 365 days a year and raise a family? And so increasingly in the 70s and 80s, it became a hard and fast rule that you just couldn't have kids. And the kids that were born to Scientologists, particularly those that had joined the Sea Org, were brought into you just showed a picture of it, the Cadet Org, which was like a Sea Org for kids. And so these kids were being groomed from a very early age to the idea that they too are going to join this organization. And people always ask me, well, how can parents just hand over their kids to an organization and go off and do their thing? Well, one thing that's important to keep in mind about Scientology, I sort of alluded to a little bit. One of the key main ideas is that you and I were just inhabiting this physical body for right now, but our true selves are this immortal soul that they call a thetan. And we have lived for trillions and quadrillions of years through a series of meat bodies over countless lifetimes. And once you die, once this body dies, then as a thetan, you get whisked off. There's this whole between life thing I can talk about later, but you come back as this disembodied soul, this thetan. You then go to a maternity ward and jump into a newborn baby to start a new lifetime. Now, if you are a thetan and you are jumping into an infant, what is your relationship to the mother and father who had that child? It's illusory, right? There is no connection. You're just jumping into that body. You have nothing to do with the mother and the father. And in fact, Hubbard teaches that in this lifetime, you may have a particular mother and father, but go back three or four or five lifetimes and you might be the father of them. And so they're basically doing, what happens is, the family becomes this fiction, and the ties between family members can become incredibly tenuous. Now, I'm not saying there aren't Scientology families that are very tight. There are. But the Scientology philosophy tends to undercut family ties because you are taught that you are simply a thetan in this body, and the relationship you have with your family is really only temporary and illusory. And so this is how families can just drop their kids off. And I mean, this is one of the most heartbreaking things as I talk to people today who haven't seen, you know, their parents in 20 or 30 years and never hear from them because they left Scientology and their parents stayed behind. So this is one of the more toxic things about Scientology that we cover on the website.
Does I don't know if it's Mennonites or one of the, they get.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Give them at a certain age an opportunity to leave and go experience the world and make the decision to come back or not.
Yeah.
Does Scientology ever like give them an opportunity?
Rimschwinger. Yeah, Rimschwinger.
Give them an opportunity to, you know, explore, experiment, and then come back to the church?
No.
Or once you're gone, no. You're gone.
Short answer, no.
Well, summer of love.
Many or most of the Sea Org people that I have talked to were all signed that contract at 13 or 14.
Oh my God.
And I've talked to a couple of people who signed it at 6 years old.
6 years? So, can't even spell it. Yeah.
In crayon. Okay. So they want a commitment from you as soon as you can possibly give it to them. And they, you know, I've talked to plenty of people that went in at 13 or 14 and they didn't come out until they were in their 30s or 40s and then struggled to adapt to the modern world. I mean, they'll come out of the SEA organization, they don't have a driver's license, they don't have a bank account, they don't know what insurance is. I mean, then the mental whammy, that Scientology rewires the brain. It really teaches you a different way of thinking, L. Ron Hubbard way of thinking, that makes it very difficult to readapt to the modern world when you leave it. And they always tell me it takes years and years and years to kind of throw off that Scientology indoctrination.
I want to talk about when L. Ron Hubbard finally passed away. I mean, he passed away, and then I think it was David, how do you pronounce his name?
Miscavige.
When he took over, was there a huge transformation of different direction, keep L. Ron Hubbard's vision? Because, you know, when there's a new CEO in town, a lot of times there's a big changes in new power. So when he finally passed away, what happened to Scientology?
Right. And that's always a challenge for a group like this to survive the death of the founder. That's usually, you know, something that a group like this would have a very hard time with. And they knew that. I mean, Miscavige knew that it was going to be very delicate. Hubbard died on January 24th, 1986. He was 74 years old. He had a couple of strokes. And so 3 days later on Monday night, January 27th, 1986, as many Scientologists that could attend were invited down to the Hollywood Palladium, and, David Miscavige walked out on stage. And I've talked to, you know, a bunch of people that were there that night, and they all say they not only had never seen David Miscavige, they'd never heard of him. Cause some of these Sea Org officials were so behind the scenes that the public members of the church didn't know them. They didn't really know who was running the church. And so this, you know, he was only 25 at the time, 26, 25. David Miscavige walked out on stage, and what he told them was that Hubbard had been working on these really high level secret things, and that his body had become an impediment, that he wasn't going to be able to really get the super secrets of existence and Thetans until he started to work outside of his body. Mm-hmm. And so the Scientologists were told that Hubbard had voluntarily left a very healthy body and was off on some other location now in the galaxy doing his research.
With his medals.
With his medals, yeah.
If you listen carefully to that, the recording of that event, you hear a ripple of emotion pass through the crowd, because although to this day, I'm told there are Scientologists that actually believe that, that Hubbard voluntarily left his body and is somewhere else. You know that people realize what he's really saying. It's that this person that they have revered is dead. And he says, Miscavige says something like, listen, I know some of you are experiencing something, but you know, we want you to keep it together. He would want you to keep it together. They trotted out this attorney then to claim that Hubbard was a sound body and, you know, and all this stuff. But yeah, so the question is then, what happens to the organization? Because Hubbard was a megalomaniac and didn't share power with anybody. And it was very controversial what happened next. There was a young couple that had been with Hubbard in his last days, Pat and Annie Broecker. And some people wondered if they were going to take over. And Hubbard had appeared to sort of favor them. But I always point out that the document that he supposedly named them this new rank came out the day before he died, and he was in no shape to write something like that. So I just think that was bogus.
Well, there's that happens a lot in a lot of different, whether you call them religions or cults or whatever, movements, where there is a primary founder who is so revered. It actually happened with Bhagwan Rajneeshni or Osho. Same thing. They had this whole, you know, thing around his death where he knew exactly when he was going to die and that he did it voluntarily. And he actually, with that documentary on Netflix called Wild, Wild Country, I think it is, that it's indicated that he actually committed suicide. He arranged for himself to be, lethally injected so that he could die. And he had been seemingly depressed and tried it a few times, and so that he could die at a certain time, you know what I mean? So it could have seemed prophetic and that he did it, you know, intentionally. So that's actually quite common. And there's some kind of, I think, David, you probably know more about this, but in Eastern religions, Hindu or something, where that is something where they actually intentionally become smaller and then they melt away or something. Like,
I don't know about that. I mean, I'm intentionally trying not to die.
You're not charging $800 an hour yet, so I'm going to say, hold on.
Well, Hubbard was an old guy who died.
That's it. With strokes, you know what I mean? Like, there you go.
So, but getting back to the question about Miscavige, so Miscavige had been sort of maneuvering in a power position for a while. There's a long, complex story about how he had become kind of a bottleneck for information, and that any kind of information going into and out of Hubbard's area had to go through him. So he was building power, and then in the days after that announcement, he just really did a good job of maneuvering other people out of the way and became a dictator. And I know that there's some old timers who think that there should have been something more democratic to happen then, but I just think that's naive. I think Scientology is one of those organizations that only operates if it's got a dictator at the helm. And he just was more strong and was more ruthless and pushed other people out of the way and then consolidated his power. So today, he's virtually alone on top. There's got nobody else in the upper ranks with him. And I often point out also that this is a shrinking organization. It's a very small organization. There's not that many members left. But he doesn't need anybody. He's got the copyrights. He's got the trademarks. And he's got these billionaires giving him millions and millions of dollars. So it's really a one-man show at this point.
How many members are in the Church of Scientology?
Yes, the Scientology's always claimed millions, and it's always they've never had millions. In 1969, they put out a book, and on the inside cover, it claimed they had 15 million people in 1969.
Wow!
And then a few years, a decade later, they were saying we have 6 million people. And of course, well, what happened to the other 9 million? You know? So, I mean, these numbers were completely bogus, and. And then in 2011, I think, or 2012, they actually put out a TV ad, and it said that 4.4 million people were joining Scientology every year.
Oh my gosh!
And to give you some idea of how much that is, so in the 7 years since then, they should have something like 30 million people, right? There are 30 million actual Mormons in the world, and there are 16 million Jewish Americans, but have you ever actually run into a Scientologist on the street? I mean, it's just, they don't have millions. And the proof of that is that we have lots of upper level executives have left in recent years. And I always ask them about this. And the top guys that had access to enrollment figures tell me that the height, Scientology's greatest extent, was about the year 1990 when they had about 100,000 people. And it's been shrinking since then. And the estimate I got from these these executives have just left. And in 2008, they told me there were probably about 40,000 left.
Wow.
And then in 2013, another executive defected who had been working right in the nerve center at the Hollywood Guarantee Building in Hollywood. And he had daily access to enrollment figures from around the world. And his estimate for me is now Scientology is down to 20,000 or less.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's a very, very small organization. And so other proof besides these executives saying it is that there are four big annual events on the Scientology calendar. On New Year's Eve, they're in Los Angeles. March 13th for L. Ron Hubbard's birthday, they're at Ruth Eckert Hall in Clearwater, Florida. In a week in June, they're on their cruise ship, the Free Winds, for something called Maiden Voyage. And then in October, they have a event in England called the IAS Annual Gala, which is held in the Big Ten. Well, this you could put, you know, set your clock to it. They do these four events year after year, and they've done them for many, many years. The event in LA is done in a venue that holds no more than 2,000 people. The event in Clearwater, Florida holds a little more than 2,000 people. And this tent in England, they claim can hold 6,000 or 7,000, but we've literally, they put up these really large format photos of the entire crowd and we count the heads. And again, there's like 2,000 people. So this organization year after year in their most important events of the year are able to bring together about 2,000 people. And so if you've got about 20,000, that's about right. You know, I mean, not everybody can go to the events, but you know, if they had really had 8 or 9 or 10 million people, they would be able to put together an event with more than 2,000. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And then there's one more piece of evidence that I find very convincing. And that is Mark Headley was working at the Int base near Hemet, California, where they do a lot of their audiovisual stuff. And he was in charge of ordering new e-meters. They had a whole new model of e-meter that was ordered in the early 2000s. It wasn't released until just a couple of years ago, but they had to get them made in China. And Mark tells me David Miscavige had him order 30,000 of them. So, you know, I mean, again, that's just another piece of proof that that's the real, you know, magnitude of the number of active Scientologists in the world.
It's definitely shrinking, but if you live here in Los Angeles, they definitely make themselves very grand.
Mm-hmm. They have a lot of property. They have a lot of property, yeah. and they know how to kind of make a show. But again, it's an organization in trouble. I think we are seeing signs where they're having trouble staffing facilities now because they've opened a lot of facilities and they just don't have the people.
Well, you say David is kind of a solo man, but if you think about it, you see this guy,
yeah,
Tom Cruise. he seems like he's a leader of it because he's definitely a big spokesperson for Scientology. And do you think, Tom has made it to the level of David, or because it seems like Tom is always, that's who they always refer to. Think Scientology? Right. Tom
ambassador,
Cruise.
At least.
Right.
Right. In 1955, L. Ron Hubbard announced Project Celebrity. He literally put a bounty on the heads of celebrities. And he told Scientologists he wants them to bring celebrities in because he knew you bring in somebody like Tom Cruise, it makes Scientology look attractive. And these celebrities that do get involved, like Cruise or Kirstie Alley or John Travolta or Michael Pena or Bonnie Ribisi, Laura Prepon, Elizabeth Moss, they never actually talk about what Scientology is. They always just tell you to read a book or that it was very helpful to them. They never will tell you about the past life auditing. They'll never tell you about the invisible body things. They're trained very well. I talked to a former celebrity that was in the church, Jason Begay, and he told me that you literally go through training on how not to tell people about what's in Scientology. And these, from the beginning, these celebrities were considered ornaments. That's what they are. They're just there to look pretty and make Scientology look good. They have zero power inside the actual workings of the church. Remember, in order to run Scientology or be in that upper level of management, you have to be a member of the C organization. You have to sign that billion-year contract. You have to work 365 days a year, 100.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
12 hours a week for virtually no pay. Hmm. I don't see Tom Cruise signing a Sea Org contract. No. And becoming a round-the-clock Scientology worker. So, yes, there's no question that Tom Cruise is very close to David Miscavige. They're very tight friends. Tom has even bought a condo now in Clearwater, right inside the Flag Land Base. He's put, you know, I broke that story a couple years ago that he was getting this double-level penthouse, and we hear now that he's got his sisters moving into the building. I mean, he's a very, very loyal member of Scientology, and very, as John Brousseau put it to me, a longtime Sea Org member who worked very closely with both Miscavige and Cruise. John Brousseau said to me, Tom Cruise worships David Miscavige like a god.
Mm. Wow.
Weird.
That is pretty weird. We have about 7 minutes left, and I want to make sure we get to the heart of what I really want to talk about is Leah Remini. Like I said, she brought forth a lot of the scandalous accusations and also stories of people trying to leave Scientology and getting just hounded and just trying to be destroyed by Scientology. What is the truth about that? When you leave Scientology, if you leave quietly, do they leave you alone, or how does that work?
Yeah, that's why you won't hear from most people who leave the church, is because they know about Scientology's reputation for what's called fair game, which was a policy spelled out by Hubbard. All of these policies of trying to destroy people and litigate people and ruin their lives were all spelled out very clearly by Hubbard in the 50s and 60s, and he's dead now, so they can't change it. So they fair game me. They're always sliming me online. They go after – they tried to intimidate my mother a couple of times.
Oh, wow.
This is how they go after family members. And I remember when Leah first came defected, I broke that story in 2013 that she first was leaving Scientology. And then she was thinking about becoming very active. And I wondered, are they going to go after her? And at first, Miscavige was kind of hands off with her. She started her television series, which was absolutely fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I remember after the first season, they had created a website where they were sliming some of us that appeared on the show, but they were still not going after Leah too hard. Hmm. And I wondered if maybe Miscavige was intimidated by her or what. But everything changed when A&E announced that she was going to have a second season, which I think was like March or April 2017. I mean, the day after Miscavige heard that she was getting a second season, he just snapped or something. And they just went on the internet and viciously attacked her. And suddenly she's being followed, and her family members are being intimidated. So she started to get the full effect of fair game. But it's funny to me that Miscavige waited until he knew she was going to get a second season.
Not the second season.
I'm surprised she got three seasons. I mean,
surprised too.
They covered so much material. They covered pretty much everything. And I don't think there's any, I mean, I think I know what she and Mike have planned for their next step. And I think it's going to be fantastic. I think that the television series thing was, it's amazing it even existed at all. I give her so much credit for how many amazing stories she was able to put on the air, and A&E for its bravery, because all of those A&E executives were also getting slimed by Scientology. But, you know, she's, you know, they're going to do some interesting things coming up that and that show is always going to be, right, you know, people can watch it now. I mean, it's going to exist forever.
So, Tony, there's this story that I heard about where David Miscavige's father, who defected from Scientology, was being followed by private detectives. And one day he's at an Aldi supermarket. He's in the parking lot. He leans over to put his groceries down. And, like, I think his phone was in his chest pocket. He went to grab it so it wouldn't fall out. And these guys who were the investigators thought he was having a heart attack. They call Miscavige, David, his son. They tell him, "We think your son's having a heart attack. What should we do?" And he says, can you finish the story? Let him, right?
He says, let him die. Let him die. Yeah. No, that was Ron Miscavige, David's dad, actually escaped from the base in 2012. And not too long after that, he and I started secretly talking with each other. Oh, but wow. He wanted to wait until he had an opportunity to really make a splash. And so he came out with a book about his son. The title is Ruthless. And what motivated him to write that book was something related to those private investigators. Yeah, he found out that Dave, his own son, was spending $10,000 a week to have these two private investigators follow him everywhere.
Wow.
And I mean, they were tracking his car and everything, but they were questioned simply because some neighbors saw them and thought they were acting suspiciously. The police went to interview them and realized they had this arsenal in their car. Now, my theory is these were just a couple of gun-loving Americans who just happened to have a fairly amazing cache of weapons in their car, and they claimed to be target shooters. They probably were. I don't think they were really intending to harm Ron Miscavige. But it got them in a lot of trouble because they had a homemade PVC silencer for one of their rifles. And that's really bad. They were facing 10 years in federal prison for having that little piece of plastic. Wow. And so they sang like canaries. And
right.
My website is still the only one where you can hear their entire police interview on audio. Wow. And they're talking about how, because they were afraid the police thought they were assassins and they were going to go to prison. So they're like, no. All we're doing is following some guy for the Church of Scientology, which is amazing information, right? So Ron was really, they had to let Ron know, and he was upset. So he decided he wanted to go see his daughters in Florida. David Miscavige is actually a twin. He's got a twin sister named Denise, and they have a younger sister named Lori. And so Ron went down to Florida to see Denise and Lori to talk about this and say, look, Dave's doing to our family what he does to all these other families. And they wouldn't see him. And he was so upset about that, his first call was to Lisa Marie Presley, who he was close with. And Lisa Marie was really upset about what she heard. She went down to Florida to have a confrontation with David Miscavige. He chickened out and sent Denise and Lori instead to see her and just screamed at her. And it was such a dumb thing to do. Lisa Marie was incensed. She went back to her hotel, told the people she was with, I'm no longer a Scientologist. It was Lisa Marie who took those police reports from those private investigators and fed it to the Los Angeles Times. And that's how it became such a big story, because Lisa Marie is very media savvy. And so then that's what motivated Ron Miscavige to write his book, was the fact that his daughters would see him and that David had ripped his family apart. So, and Ron now does videos every week. He does a great job. He's really something. I really enjoy talking to him.
Wow.
Some people in the chat room, do you think David will actually eventually get arrested and prosecuted? Or do you think it's be protected around the wall?
It's really hard to predict, because the First Amendment protections of a tax-exempt church are so strong. And we've seen this time and time again where it seems like there's great evidence of wrongdoing by the church, but you get into court and the first thing the court says is First Amendment, you can't tell a church what to do.
Right.
And these judges will say, yeah, I can't really get it. And it's really frustrating, because as Marcy Hamilton has said, who's part of this legal team that's filed some new lawsuits, that religious freedom should not protect a church that's actually harming people.
Of course.
And that's, that was my next question is.
You know, like, for example, there was a case in Florida that went before a judge. This judge previously had sent some Christian operators to prison because although they were Christian preachers and they had been literally extorting and defrauding people. And he, in his decision, he said, you know, religious freedom is not a shield against criminality.
Right.
So when Scientology was sued in that same courtroom before that judge, we thought, oh, okay, so this judge isn't going to get snowed by Scientology. But even though this couple claimed that they had been defrauded and lied to, the church said, no, but they signed contracts with us that claimed that they would abide by our internal arbitration. And the judge said, well, if that's the church's rules, I can't get into the church's rules because they're protected by the First Amendment. And wow. He kicked their case out.
Mm-mm-mm.
So, you know, I think Scientology for many, many years has benefited from the courts just not really understanding them and giving them breaks that they don't deserve.
Well, I mean, there's so many more questions that we could ask. So we're definitely going to have to extend the invitation to come back. But I know one other question that I saw in the chat room that perked my interest is the like disappearance of people.
Yeah. Shelley. Is her name Shelley Miscavige, right?
Right. David Miscavige married Shelley Barnett, and they ran Scientology together for many years. She was a top hard as nails executive in her own right. And I have various eyewitnesses to the fact that in 2004, 2005, they seemed to be having a little marital problems. She did something while he was gone that angered him, which seemed sort of superfluous. And in late August, early September 2005, she vanished.
Hmm.
And she's been gone out of the public eye for the 14 years since then. Now, I know where she is. Top other former executives, we all know where she is. Scientology, where she had been working at Int Base, which is their main international compound near Hemet, California, and where there's this prison thing called The Hole. She is not in The Hole, okay? She was never in The Hole. A lot of people make that mistake. The Hole is a kind of prison environment for top executives at Int Base. She was working at Int Base and then vanished to somewhere else. Where they've been holding her is a smaller compound up in the mountains above Los Angeles near Lake Arrowhead. It's called, I call it CST headquarters, which is short for Church of Spiritual Technology. Scientologists call it various things. They call it Twin Peaks. They call it Rim Forest. There's various names. It's a super secret organization inside of an organization. Most Scientologists had never heard of it when they were in the church. I have yet to run across a church executive that had ever been to a CST location. Other than there's just one person that actually used to work there that has come out and has talked about it. These locations have vaults. There's four vaults, three in California, one in New Mexico. This CST's job is to preserve L. Ron Hubbard's words for thousands of years. And so they spend incredible amounts of money etching his words on stainless steel plates, storing them in titanium boxes. And they store it in these vaults. That's the work she's doing. The main vault, the CST headquarters in that little compound above Los Angeles, that's where they do that archiving work, and that's where she's been for 14 years. And David Miscavige will not bring her out. To him, she doesn't exist anymore. He's basically banished her. And, you know, it's just incredible that the leader of a multi-billion-dollar organization in America today can banish his wife and make her disappear for 14 years.
But she's there voluntarily. She's still in.
Well, no, I mean, voluntarily. I mean, if the police went in there and said, Shelley, you can leave, would she go with them? It's hard to know. I mean, she's so indoctrinated.
Right.
But I have some have some evidence to suggest she's aware of her fate. She knows that she's a prisoner. Now, whether or not she would leave, I don't know. But it's incredible that Miscavige has been able to get away with it.
So Stockholm syndrome, something like that.
And so the only thing that's going to be left after the next ice age for the next human civilization
Twinkies?
Is L. Ron Hubbard's words.
And Twinkies.
Twinkies.
And cockroaches.
And Cher.
Cockroaches. Yeah.
Right.
Well, Tony, thank you so much. Like I said, you're going to have to come back. There's just too many more questions.
Okay,
and
sure.
And but, Tony, you can go to TonyOtego.org and find his daily updates and blog. And we appreciate you doing what you do. And always welcome here on Truth Be Told. And so please go to and support him. But Tricia, how do people find you?
TriciaCarCharm.com. My show is called Charmed Life with Tricia Carr. And, of course, all of my services and classes are up there on my website.
And Mr. David?
Energy Matters Podcast or DavidGandelman.com.
And I'm Tony Sweet with Captain Ron. But thank you guys for always tuning in, supporting us. And please subscribe, share this show. And until next time, I'll see you then. And have a great one. Go out and make it a good day. Bye.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.